welcome to the Human Condition Podcast on Resilience Radio. I'm Lee Hatcher. When I say video games, a whole host of images and maybe issues will spring to your mind, most likely determined by your own particular generation. For lots of parents, it's a bewildering world. They're often anxious about it, sometimes for good reason. But there are ways that parents can navigate what's also a pretty amazing world with their kids. Adam Wright, a clinical psychologist at the Resilience Centre, has had a great deal of experience bringing families together when it comes to video games. He says they're much more prevalent than many people might think.
There was a report done about the extent of video gaming in Australia. It was done in 2016, called the Digital Australia Report, as well as the internet use in Australia. They found that 98% of homes with a child under 18 had a device for playing computer and video games in Australia. And they found that 68% of Australians in general are playing video games. That number is 77% for 1 to 17-year-olds and 91% for those aged 5 to 14. Wow. So it's really quite ubiquitous through our life these days.
Again, for the uninitiated, these games are very different from the early days of gaming like Space Invaders, Donkey Kong, Pac-Man.
Back in those days when video games first came out, we didn't have the processing power in computers to be able to do much with them. So they're very basic, often just a few simple tasks that you would do in the game, and there'd be a few levels, and that was about it. These days, the games are huge in scope. You've got things such as, if you've heard of World of Warcraft, it's a massive multiplayer online role-playing game. Basically, you can go in there and do whatever you like, whether that's, you know, fight monsters or even just kind of walk around and talk to other people. You've got games which have kind of full stories, like, you know, movie length or even longer stories that you can just go through. And you also have these games these days which are much more multiplayer. A really common thing these days is multiplayer games where there might be like kind of shoot 'em games where young people will get into teams and they'll battle other people. And these games actually are timed. So rather than having levels, you know, you play them for about 30 or 40 minutes and then the game's over. So a lot different to the way it used to be.
So I suppose asking kids to get off a game like these days is the same as asking them, if you can think of an analogy, it's like saying to a kid halfway through a game on the football field, you're off.
Pretty much. So something that I see lots of adolescent boys as part of my work, and I often ask them, what do parents need to know about games these days? And the one thing they consistently say is you can't save the games. Yeah, these are 30 to 40 minute kind of cooperative or multiplayer online games. If you kind of walk out of them, not only are you actually kind of causing a detriment to your team members who you're playing the game with.
Yes, yes.
Actually, some games will actually even kind of have inbuilt punishment systems in place where you might actually lose some of the progress you've made in the game if you exit prematurely. So you can understand that kids aren't very motivated to just get off the game if they're in the middle of something like this.
And you get a reputation as a quitter.
Yes.
And not a team member.
Yes.
If you take that trip down memory lane and look at those old games, they didn't last very long, of course, compared with this durability. Mm. Why are these, I suppose I know this in a way, but why are they so powerful in drawing kids in?
Because we had limited processing power from computers back in those days, the only way you could really make a game like Space Invaders, for example, to be kind of playable was to just keep making the difficulty a little bit harder incrementally.
Yes.
So basically, once you got the hang of one level, you'd move up. And that's how you got into it. And pretty much the only thing you could do to really get it going is, if you're a particularly obsessive person, you could kind of try and aim for those top levels and play what was it, like an insane difficulty. These days, because we've got so much more scope with our games, there's just so many other ways to draw people in. Some of them have a really rich and immersive world where there's all kinds of things you can do in the game. And also, there's something in psychology we refer to as flow. It's a concept about this sweet spot in terms of a task being kind of difficult and challenging, but you still having the skills for it. And what games can do these days to actually build that sense of flow is actually dynamically vary the difficulty level of the game as you play. So if you're going through battling monsters and you're finding it hard to keep up, then the game will reduce the amount of monsters in it so that you can get back on track. So once it gets easier again, they can add more monsters in and kind of draw you in even more.
It's amazing. It must be also said that these games are an important form of, in a way, socialising for young people. I mean, not to older people perhaps, but this is a really kind of important social gathering online.
Yes. Again, talking to young people, I've found that often the games you play can be a part of it, almost like a status symbol or a part of your, you know, your association with your friends. So there's already that. I mean, back in the day, you know, if a few kids played the same games, they had something to talk about together. But these days, you know, kids can go home from school after socializing all day, log on to the game, and then start socializing again in this new world.
In another world.
Yeah.
Yes, entirely. So what's your advice to parents, Adam? I'm sure you're not out to make them killjoys, but what's your wisdom in not just controlling, but just dealing with this whole new, very different world?
So when I talk to parents about games, and I talk to them a lot, as you can imagine, the concerns they usually have seem to revolve around, I guess, how games get in the way of productivity, you know, with regards to school and other chores and things, and also the concerns about who they might be socializing with. And something I kind of explain a lot is that in the adolescent brain, one thing we know, there's a lot of research has been documented, that a part of the brain that's not fully developed yet is what's what we call executive functioning. And that is the ability to kind of think ahead, to plan ahead, to organize, and also to kind of stop behaviors and shift behaviors if you need to. And this part of the brain actually isn't fully developed until someone's about 23 years old. So parents are dealing with kids who are playing these immersive worlds where it's really built in to kind of grab their attention. I mean, and it's a great source of strength for them. And if you kind of just come in there and just kind of pull them out, it makes sense you're going to cause a lot of conflict because you're just kind of, there's just a number of barriers that you're trying to work through and just doing that.
Yes.
So what I often suggest to parents really is to try and get as much into the world of the game as the kid is.
Themselves,
you know?
Yeah.
To understand what the game's about and how it works. I would actually really encourage parents to actually try and play the games with them. Mm. Most of my young people say they would probably enjoy doing that.
That was my next question. Are they going to want their parents in?
Yeah. I found in my experience that often kids like to be sometimes in a position where they're a teacher. You know, they're imparting wisdom and knowledge.
Yes, I bet.
And a game is a great opportunity for them to do that with a parent, especially a parent who's, you know, who's feigning real interest and curiosity in the game. I guess when you know more about the game and you can work with the child on their level as to, okay, how are we going to set limits for this so it's not causing you problems?
So that's a fair enough thing to try on with a child.
Yeah, I think parents should come at it in terms of, like, you know, I want you to play this game. It's really important to you. The social aspects are great, but you can't just keep doing this because look at all the other commitments you have. How do we work together to try and manage this so you can still have fun with your game, but it's not getting in the way of everything else?
Because they're also playing online with people who might not have that kind of framework. They might just go on and on and on. So
yes.
How do you navigate that?
Parents, you know, it's very important for them to kind of state that the boundaries apply for their family and, you know, and giving the kids skills into how to manage that in terms of their friends. You know, it's fair enough, I think, for parents to encourage their kids to say that, I know you guys are going to be able to play, but this is where I have to get off. And not having that be a cause of conflict. Because, yeah, there will always be differences in, you know, the family that you're a part of and also the families of the other gamers they're playing with.
Character building for a child, Adam.
Yes.
At the extreme end, we'll be talking about probably a gaming addiction for some young people. What are the signs that parents will be on the lookout for? What should they do? Where can they go to get some help?
The signs of addiction actually really apply across a lot of different things. In particular in gaming, you'd find them spending way too much time gaming, thinking about gaming, trying to access playing games, and as a result, there being problems with them managing their other responsibilities and lots of conflict around getting off the game and things like that. You'd probably also notice that there might be some signs of depression or anxiety, so like low mood, poor sleep patterns as well. Usually when you look at like an addictive behavior, it's usually got to do with there being other issues. I would encourage parents, if they're concerned about the gaming of their kids, to probably take them to a doctor and a psychologist so that they could look at the gaming and the role it has in that person and whether it's actually there as a coping strategy for other bigger issues. Well, yeah, like, for example, difficulties at school, difficulties with peers, difficulties keeping up with the workload and stress and things like that.
Adam, it's been a most illuminating conversation on a really important era and such a dominant one for so many families today. Thank you so much indeed.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm Lee Hatcher. Head to the Resilience Centre website for lots of other great conversations and resources. www.theresiliencecentre.com.au